Welcome today to our interview series with outstanding professionals. I'm Stephen Ibaraki, and I'm conducting an exclusive interview with Mark Walters, President and Chairman of the Z-Wave Alliance. Mark is an international technology standards and policy authority. Now, Mark, thank you for coming in today and sharing your deep experiences with our audience.
Well, thank you for having me.
Mark, you've got just an amazing background. You've done a lot, and of course, you're now president and chairman of this very important Z-Wave Alliance. Can you talk about some of your career successes and then lessons that you learned that you feel will be useful to the audience?
Yeah, that's a great question. Not really sure where you start. I've been very, very fortunate in my career in that I've had an opportunity to wear a lot of different hats. My background is actually in sciences and biology and chemistry, and somewhere along the lines I ended up in technology and have served in a number of different roles for a number of different companies, including, you know, some operations, some manufacturing, some engineering management, some general business management, and now I find myself running a global consortium. And I think what's worked best for me throughout my career is just being very curious, asking a lot of questions, and being fortunate enough to find technologies and companies that have been exciting to me, that have just kind of driven my curiosity and kept me going.
Now, as I mentioned in the introduction, you're an international technology standards and policy authority, and you spent time in your career to reach that global rank. Can you describe your journey leading to your current role?
Yeah, I think, again, as I mentioned earlier, I started out in sciences and then got interested in electronics way back in the early 80s when the Ethernet was just starting to happen. And it was always very exciting to me, how we could communicate across great distances, with people in many different countries. And so I've always kept some element of technology and of communication in my career path. What I've found has always been very helpful and interesting is to be able to work with a number of different companies and a number of different engineers in different companies, and to take a what I would call more of a 50,000 foot view of things than get too deep. I sometimes, as an engineer or a technical guy myself, want to get in and solve the problem, but to get where I am today, what's helped me make that is to keep a broader perspective and not dive down and try to solve any one particular challenge, technical challenge, but to see how the technology relates to the solution space. So instead of getting very, very excited about communicating over low-power wireless and exactly how you communicate over low-power wireless, I've been able to keep my sights on what can you do with that communication channel. Oh, well, you can control a door lock, or you can control a thermostat, or you can control window shades or something like this. So I think key for me in my career path and getting to the Z-Wave Alliance and the chairmanship that I have there now has been, again, keeping that broader scope, higher level perspective, and understanding how to apply the technology to the business and how to make, solve problems, make people's lives better using the technology rather than focusing specifically on the technology itself.
Now, many in the audience may not be familiar with the Z-Wave Alliance and really what were the pain points or challenges that led up to the formation and you being the chairman and president, but also, I guess, what is the value of the work of the Z-Wave Alliance? So can you comment further?
Yeah, that's a great question. So Z-Wave is a technology that was invented in Denmark back in 2002. Good technology. In fact, the inventors originally thought they were going to manufacture products themselves and bring it to the marketplace as a wireless home control solution. And they realized very quickly that they were great radio engineers, but they were not so good at building thermostats, not so good at building lighting dimmers and these sort of things. And so they changed their business model in roughly in 2003, 2004 from being a home control company to being a technology supplier, a supplier of this Z-Wave low-power RF communication technology. At the time, I was working for a division of Leviton Manufacturing here in the United States, and I wasn't even working in the home control side of the division. I was actually working in the commercial telecom side, but as a home hobbyist, I'd been working with home control technologies, old power line carrier technology called X10 in my home for a long time, and realized that just wasn't getting the job done anymore, that technology had had really run its course, and we were needing a replacement. And about that same time, I ran into this group of engineers from Denmark, a company called Zensys, and we got to know each other a little bit and realized that they had a great technology. And at that time, there were three or four other companies in the world that were looking at the technology as well. Intermatic being one of them, Wayne Dalton being one of them, Danfoss being one of them, and then, of course, myself at Leviton. And we all got together and said, you know, this is a great technology. We should use it in our products, but we need to do it such that we can take advantage of each other. Because, you know, in Leviton, our forte was lighting controls. And in Wayne Dalton, their forte were access controls and garage door controls. And Dan Foss's forte was heating and thermostat type controls. So we said, if we're all going to adopt the Z-Wave technology, let's agree to do it in a way that we help each other out so that customers can buy Dan Foss product or buy Intermatic product or buy Leviton product. And as long as it all uses Z-Wave, it will all work together. So when somebody wants to do a home control solution, all they have to do is buy Z-Wave. And this sounded very simple at the time, and there were five companies involved, and we thought, okay, we'll just kind of collaborate. And very quickly that started to snowball as other companies started to contact us and saying, hey, you know, we'd like to get in on this. You know, we would like to add, you know, our products to this particular standard, this technology. So we very quickly realized that we needed to create some structure around that concept. And we formed the Z-Wave Alliance, and as the Z-Wave Alliance formed, I was chosen to be the interim chairman, because again, I was working a full-time job with Leviton Manufacturing at the time, and everybody else that was involved in the alliance at the time are all working their own full-time jobs. But we agreed, let's create an alliance, and you know, Mark, you can run it for 6 months while we figure out how to get it put together and incorporate it and come up with bylaws and all of these other things that you do when you create an industry consortium. And here I am, some 9 years later, still the interim chairman of 6 months.
You know, it's just a fascinating story. And how many members do you have now?
Slightly over 300 member companies now. As I said, we started in 2005 with our five original companies. And we now have 300 plus companies that are members of the alliance, and we just this first of the year at the Consumer Electronics Show in Las Vegas announced our 1,000th certified product. So we have 1,000 products that have been certified to be interoperable. And what we do with Z-Wave, if our listeners don't know too much about Z-Wave, is that Z-Wave is an underlying communications technology that companies put into their products. But what's most important about Z-Wave is the fact that we did create this consortium or this alliance and this standard and requirements for how you use the technology so that consumers can simply buy a Z-Wave certified product and know it will interoperate with any other Z-Wave certified product. And this turns out to be very powerful because if I'm trying to put in a home control in my home and I want to have a thermostat from, Honeywell downstairs, and I want to have a thermostat from Trane upstairs, as long as I buy the Z-Wave thermostat from each of those companies, I know they'll work together. Or I can have Leviton lighting in one part of my home, and I can have Cooper lighting in another part of my home, and I can have GE lighting in another part of my home. And as long as it's all Z-Wave, it will all work together in the same system. So that's the power of Z-Wave, and really the power of the alliance, and the power of getting these 300 companies to come together and to agree to form an alliance and to create a standard and to create a certification program and, to everybody play by the rules so that we know we can deliver to the consumer a really strong consumer experience.
And I guess also to build consumer brand awareness of the Z-Wave Alliance so they will ask for it whenever they're shopping for products and services.
Absolutely, and this turns out for me actually to be the most fun side of the job, if you will. I never thought of myself as a marketeer per se. I always thought of myself more as a technology guy. But with the Z-Wave Alliance, we really do have two very different hats that we wear. One side is very much the technical side that I've been talking about, and that's creating the standard, becoming the standards body, creating the mechanism for our member companies, and in fact, anybody that wants to contribute to the Z-Wave standard and ensuring that all of that works from a technical standpoint. But as you just mentioned, the other side of the business is to really to go out and evangelize the technology. One, to bring more companies into the ecosystem and into the standard so that we can continue to offer the consumer more and more choices. but also so that consumers can become aware of what they can do with this technology and, you know, what kinds of things that they can do with home control or business control. A lot of consumers don't know too much about this. They're starting to become exposed to it now with, you know, some of the commercials that are running on TV from, you know, companies like AT&T and Vivint and Verizon. But it's still very poorly understood by the public in terms of, you know, wow, I didn't know I could control my thermostat from my phone or from my office, or I didn't know I could lock and unlock my door from my computer. So it's kind of fun doing the marketing and the technology evangelism. We will do 9 trade shows this year around the world. We have a couple in Europe, a couple in Asia, several in North America. And in addition to those trade shows, as chairman of Z-Wave Alliance, I get to go to a lot of industry events and talk about Z-Wave and how it fits in with things like energy savings programs, utility programs. They're called demand response programs for saving energy. I'm getting a chance right now to work with the U.S. government and the National Institute of Standards and Technologies as we figure out how the Internet of Things is going to improve people's lives. And as chairman of the Z-Wave Alliance, I'm very fortunate in that I get to go to Washington, D.C., get to do both as chairman of the Z-Wave Alliance, you know, the technical work, which is quite fun, and then, of course, the higher level or the different level of marketing evangelism.
So I can see why others would want to get involved in this work. You know, they can contribute to the standard. They can participate, in essence, with you as chair to have a presence in Washington or at these different conferences that are you're attending or trade shows, and in essence also to have a recognized brand that consumers will demand as well and be part of all of that. Do you have any other reasons why people should get involved in this work?
I think people should get involved in this work if they're passionate about it. I mean, obviously there's commercial reasons, and I'm proud to say that after all of these years of working on Z-Wave that we have garnered quite some brand recognition and brand value in the marketplace, and we'll continue to expand on that. So we do now finally see companies coming to Z-Wave. Instead of looking for technology, they're actually looking to be part of our brand and part of our ecosystem because they know that it's recognized and they know that it's going to be successful in the marketplace and it's going to give their product a leg up. So they're not buying just a superior technology, but they're actually buying a successful consumer brand. And that's tough. I have to say to the listeners out there, that is not something that you do overnight. That takes years and years and years. And we're just beginning to enjoy the advantages of being a recognized brand. But I think the primary reason that anybody should come in, and particularly into a standards organization where they want to contribute to a standard, is that they need to be passionate about it. 90% of the people that are working at this level with me, a lot of cases it's part of their job, but it's really kind of an extra part of their job. So they do 3 hours or 50 hours a week, and then they contribute to the alliance on top of that. And it needs to be something where you find some personal enjoyment, some personal fulfillment, not just professional, because you're going to put a lot of extra hours in when you work in any standards body. And I'm fortunate enough not only to be the chairman of the Z-Wave Alliance, but I do quite a bit of work with other organizations, technology organizations, and IEEE and ITU and some other standards bodies. And in place everywhere I go, it's very, very bright people that are very passionate about what they're doing. And it's just a lot of fun. It's great to get together with, you know, sharp people that are excited and willing and able to put the extra hours in. But I would caution anybody that wants to get involved in the technology that if you're not feeling it in your heart, it's going to be a lot of work.
Now, you talked about why people should get involved and to make it somewhat a passion, and so that it's not work, it's sort of like a calling, I guess. But from your standpoint, then, what do you hope to accomplish this year?
My big personal goal this year is to continue to evangelize for the Z-Wave technology and to apply it to more of what we call aging independently or independent living. This is something that I'm personally very passionate about. It's not hard to take a look at the graphics and realize that, you know, the population is growing old very rapidly. And it's also not hard to take a look at what's happening in the economy and happening with the whole medical system, not just in this country, but worldwide, in terms of, you know, who's going to pay for this care that we need as we get older. And for me, technology is going to play a huge component. Now, we've already seen how we can use simple home control type technologies to allow people to stay in their homes longer. There's some very, very cool work being done from the universities right now with other consumer electronics products like the Microsoft Kinect sensor, where you can use the Microsoft Kinect sensor, which was really designed for, you know, being a user interface for a gaming machine, but you can use a Microsoft Kinect sensor to find out if somebody is walking in their home at a normal rate, or if they've slowed down, or if they're limping, or perhaps even if they fall, it can detect a fall. And so we can put this technology that exists today into new applications that will allow people to stay in their homes longer as they age, and to do so confidently and comfortably. And, you know, if they need a little assistance, to know that the house is smart enough to say, hey, you know, call my next door neighbor and have them come over here and help me get up off the floor, or whatever it is that I need to do. So for 2014, for me, for Mark, my passion is going to be continuing to work with ZWave and the technology, but to really start to push the applications, the aging independent, and applying the technology to helping those of us that need a little extra help get through the day.
Okay, so, you know, that sounds like a great goal and vision for this year, and I guess extending outwards. Now, what do you wish to accomplish in the next 3 years?
Boy, I guess more of the same. I mean, something short of world domination, perhaps. So 3 years, it's going to be just continuing to bring more companies into the alliance and taking a look at how we can use our technology and evolve our technology. Our technology continues to evolve to solve new problems as they come up. Obviously, this whole thing that I've been talking about aging independently, that's an application that's going to become much, much more necessary as people begin to age. We talk a lot about the Internet of Things and all of the things out there somehow magically talking to each other into this big thing we call the cloud, and that making our lives better. I believe very strongly that we will use technology in our homes out through the Internet into much bigger collective what we're now calling cyber-physical systems, to do things like reduce traffic, to do things like reduce energy consumption. Obviously, if we're reducing energy consumption, we're doing great things for our environment. So I'm just very excited, now and next year and the year after that and the year after that, to continue to see how we can apply technology where devices are smart enough to talk to each other and devices are smart enough to report to some central intelligence of some sort. That seems kind of a little malevolent, but what they are, and who knows how that application may be. I know in Japan already they have sensors in homes that report into a central monitoring location, and they can use that as an extended seismic net, so they can tell what's going on and predict, working on predicting earthquakes. And, you know, in natural disasters, wouldn't it be great if we knew that there was a natural disaster coming that we could use, sensors in our homes to, better inform us of what might happen, what is happening, what has happened, so that we can, greatly reduce the impact of things like natural disasters, earthquakes, fires, tornadoes. So I'm very excited about that, and I think what we're going to see in the next 2 to 3 years as more companies understand the underlying value of the Z-Wave technology and the underlying value of having a way for their products to communicate with other products within a home or within a small business. And then it's even bigger than that, for those products then to report out through the Internet to a bigger application. So it could be that the house knows, hey, you're leaving home now, and 30 people on your block left home at the same time, so I need to make that stoplight at the corner stay green for an extra 25 seconds because there's this little lump of people leaving. I don't think we've even begun to think about what some of these more advanced applications could be or how they could really make our lives much richer, much nicer, much easier.
Now, this next question may be a little bit difficult to answer because I'm going to ask you about gaps. You know, you are in your current situation today in terms of the Z-Wave Alliance. You've just explained where you want to be in, like later this year and also next year and the following years. So what are the kinds of things you're going to do to close those gaps?
Yeah, that's a great question. Wow. Again, I think you just keep turning it up. It's not necessarily something different. Although, you know, again, the technology continues to evolve. We continue to bring people into the ecosystem and into the alliance. But to get to that vision that I just painted about, you know, the Internet of Things and how all of the smart devices in the country work together to improve things like traffic flow or disaster recovery. For me, it's how to close the gap. It's keeping the passion up. It's continuing to network with intelligent, bright people that are working on similar things. I'm just getting ready to go off this next week to an IEEE meeting to talk about standards and how these various different technologies talk to each other. And then the week after that, I'm in Washington, D.C. again with the National Institute of Standards and Technologies working on their Smart America Challenge, which we'll be getting together with, you know, 80 or 90 of the best minds in the country talking about these, you know, possible things we can do with this technology. And so, you know, the gap for me in the next 3 years to get this all happen is to continue to double down and continue to, you know, to get out there and be passionate and interface and network with people that are, you know, of like mind, I guess is the best way to put it. Because one thing that I have found in my career, is that if you, keep good company, if you hang out with those that share your visions, but maybe not necessarily 100%, you know, there might be some conflicts and some learning going on, heaven forbid. But if you are willing to get in there and be passionate and mix it up, solutions will present themselves, and you will end up a year out, 2 years out, 3 years out, someplace that you couldn't even envision, and it will be a great place. And if I look back to that first couple of meetings in 2004 and 2005, when there were five companies there looking at this little company out of Denmark and this radio technology, and we really just wanted to get five or six devices that we could take to the market together, but we all had bigger visions, we all had bigger thoughts, and we all realized that, wow, you know, if this works for these five companies, why won't it work for 30? Why won't it work for 200? Why won't it work for 1,000? And here we are, at the end of 2013 with 1,000 interoperable devices and 300 companies. I would suspect we'll be twice that in 3 years.
No, you know, it's interesting. Earlier you were at the International CES show in Las Vegas and, literally shirt sleeves and just working there actively, and then you're talking to the IEEE about standards and the ITU about standards and with NIST, and you're in Washington, D.C., and you're at these various trade shows, and you're interacting with the members of your coalition or federation of sorts. What surprises you then as president?
I'm sorry, could you repeat that last question? I just missed the very last part. You're right, it's a great job. It's a fantastic job, but I lost the question in the end, if you don't mind repeating it.
Well, you're involved with so much, so there must be something that surprises you as you're doing this.
Oh, surprises me. Wow, that's a great question. I guess I'm surprised that the world doesn't move any faster. It seems like this comes very, very small. And I can step back from that and even think about earlier parts of this conversation and think, wow, you know, it's really gone pretty quickly. But when you're in the midst of it, and you explain something to somebody with, you know, a great bit of, you know, passion and fervor, and then you realize that, oh, hey, you're not necessarily getting this, or you might be getting it, but it's going to take you a year or two to get it. So it continually surprises me how, I guess conservative would be a good word, that business wants to be sometimes. This might be a very strong word, but how afraid some people are to dream or to imagine or to let go of the why we can't in favor of the how about we do's. And this is something I get caught up in myself, so I'm guilty of this myself. But I am surprised often by very, very bright people that spend all of their energy figuring out just what can go wrong and just why they shouldn't do something, and spend very little energy thinking about what happens if this goes right. What happens if we get half of what we're talking about right? Because that oftentimes will so overshadow the specter of failure or the specter of why we can't do something So I'm a bit surprised, I guess, that at the general conservatism or pessimism of people that are pretty high up in a lot of companies. I mean, you know, there's certainly visionaries everywhere, but they're seeming to be fewer and farther between.
Well, that's an interesting comment about people sort of focusing perhaps on the negative rather than the opportunity. And I mean, I guess you need to focus on the opportunity, right? I mean, that's where all the innovation comes from. So you personally then, you know, what do you plan to do next?
More of the same, and as much of it as I can possibly fit in a day, I think. Reflecting back on my last comment, there are certainly lots and lots of people out there that are visionaries, and I think we see more of that now today than we probably have ever seen in the history of mankind, and certainly technology allows it. But I'm fortunate to work with a lot of very big companies, and very solid companies, and they do tend to be a little bit more conservative than the startups, and a little bit more calculating, and a little bit more, you know, running by the percentage and the numbers, and less by the passion. So that's a kind of a little addition to that previous comment. But for me, it's, you know, it's continuing to stay excited and continuing to do what I'm so fortunate to do with the Z-Wave Alliance. And, you know, is there another gig after the Alliance, and is there another gig after Z-Wave? I'm sure there is. I'm just not quite sure what that might be. And I'm certainly not spending a lot of time thinking of it because I'm having a great time doing what I'm doing right now.
Now, Mark, you're a world leader and a thought leader, and you're the chairman and president of a very important alliance. So from this kind of being the hub of an ecosystem, you know, where you're talking to NIST and the IEEE and ITU and representing your industry and different capacities and attending trade shows and so on, you would have a good idea what you see as upcoming disruptive innovations. Can you talk about that?
Boy, I guess if I was really good at that, I would be sitting on an island somewhere sipping a drink and probably worth billions in the stock market. I think it's dangerous to try to forecast the future. Disruptive innovations, that's really a tough one. I can't honestly think anything that I think is going to be tremendously disruptive. I do think that we are going to have to figure out how to fuel our technology and fuel our lives differently than we are doing today. Fossil fuels is not working for us. It's not working for the planet. We're going to have to figure out how to power our lives and our businesses more cleanly, and that will disrupt a lot of infrastructure. And if you think about how dependent we are right now on petrochemicals, and fast forward to 20, 30 years from now when we're not, hopefully we're not. So I would say that I think the global warming, carbon emissions, just the general environmental cost of extracting hydrocarbons from the environment, it's going to be disruptive. I think that's going to change the way we see and do things. I mean, you can't go into an office in Europe now being from the United States, you can't go into an office here now, not walk into the lobby and go, wow, are they open? Because the lobbies are dark and they've turned the lights way down. And that's just, you know, that's just something we're going to get used to. Of course, and then we got new things like LED lighting that might come along and solve that problem for us. But, so anyway, I think moving to hydrocarbon economy, is going to be disruptive. I think that's really the big one. We certainly see the population continuing to grow. We certainly see the population aging. I think there's going to be some disruption in that if we can't figure out how to take care of our population as it ages more effectively, more efficiently. We're going to spend a hugely more amount of resources trying to keep our elderly people, you know, living in safely and a high quality living than we've ever had in the history of mankind. Where the resources are going to come from. I think those two things are going to be pretty disruptive. You know, the hydrocarbon economy and the exploding aging population.
You know, while you were talking, I was just thinking about what you're trying to do with the Z-Wave Alliance, and I'm now thinking as I'm a consumer and I see kind of like this spectrum confusion. You know, there's my Bluetooth device, there's my cellular phone, there's my wireless mouse, there's my cordless phones, there's my router, which has its own Wi-Fi, you know, dual band. How do you address all of those kind of issues where maybe there's interference?
Yeah, that's a great question. Well, you go to a lot of IEEE meetings and ITU meetings, and you try to figure out how do we design this stuff so that it doesn't interfere with each other. And we are actually seeing, you know, situations where some of the more popular bands are causing some interference. And the technology solution is open up more bands. I don't know if it's the right one, but it's kind of the way we deal with it. So we're now seeing, you know, all of the Wi-Fi that's been done in the 2.4 gigahertz spectrum. You know, now a lot of that is moving up to the 5.2 gigahertz spectrum. So we've opened up a whole new spectrum for communication to help not only get, you know, higher bandwidths, but also to avoid some congestion. As far as the confusion, if we want to talk about congestion of people's minds, if you will, versus congestion of the airwaves, you know, I think consumers don't have to concern themselves too much with is this Bluetooth, is this Wi-Fi, is this Z-Wave, something else. As long as we do a good job as marketeers and clearly mark on our products and our solutions, you know, A goes with B and C goes with D, or if it has a Z-Wave mark on it and you buy it, it will work with anything else that has a Z-Wave mark on it. And if you have a product that's sitting in your home, maybe it's a weight scale or a blood pressure cuff or something of that nature, and it has the little Bluetooth symbol on it, and you have a little Bluetooth symbol on your cell phone, well, you know your cell phone's going to talk to that device. And, you know, fortunately for us, technology provides as many solutions as it does challenges. And it's so easy now just to scan a barcode or click on a QR code and pop to the internet and download the piece of software or the application you need to make it all happen. And from the consumer standpoint, if we as technologists and technology developers do our jobs right, continue to do our jobs right, as far as the consumer is concerned, they don't need to be concerned about what the underlying technology is. You know, technology done right is transparent. It's magic.
Now, you know, I do a lot of these interviews and with many senior executives of very large companies, and I ask this question about where growth is internationally, and they'll talk about Africa, China, India, perhaps South America, and even now greater growth in the U.S. in these sort of technical areas. Do you define these as the same top ICT growth regions internationally?
How about yes is a dull answer. Absolutely. I mean, there's lots of emerging economies and lots of recovering economies. We certainly, with the Z-Wave products, are enjoying a tremendous amount of growth in South America. South America has been strong, particularly in the building, commercial and residential building areas, when Europe and the United States have not been as strong. We certainly see the U.S. coming back, the housing markets coming back. And I think we're going to see some strong growth in that again, finally. China is going, you know, gangbusters. That just the economic growth and economic opportunity there is mind boggling. And even now that it looks like they may be slowing, perhaps, we're into single digit growth instead of double digit growth. So it's pretty phenomenal. The African continent, a lot of people. There's a lot of raw value there. When and how does that come to the marketplace? I don't know per se, but I know that there's a huge amount of opportunity there. So I think, yeah, worldwide, we see, you can't put the technology genie back in the bottle. You can't put the commerce genie back in the bottle. So barring, you know, political unrest, which unfortunately we have far too much of in this world today. Now, barring disruptions like that, we're going to see just an amazing growth worldwide in all of these economies. And we see whole countries now, whole continents now that are basically you know, skipping over a wired infrastructure. You know, they're not going from telephone to better telephone to wired internet to cable to fiber optic. You know, they're going straight to wireless solutions, and you know, they're cutting to the chase. So it's great when you realize that a lot of these countries that are just beginning to evolve technologically, they don't have to go through the same evolution that we did perhaps in Europe or in North America. They're just going to cut to the next best of the greatest thing available today. And I think that's pretty exciting because we see, you know, countries today in cities and towns that have basically nothing go from nothing to, you know, 4G LTE literally overnight. And that's pretty exciting.
Now, Mark, I can imagine as you, as CEO, and you know, you're a chairman of this really important alliance, and sometimes things are going to cause you pain and challenges, and I imagine those are revolving around controversies. So can you talk more about areas that are controversial and the work that you do?
Great question. Controversial that causes pain in the areas that I'm involved with. There's always in any business and in any technology, there's competition, and competition is healthy and it's great. But sometimes competition can be disruptive and controversial. So there's a lot of people in our industry, and I'll say our industry being wireless communication, that place a very high regard for a company's provenance, I guess, for lack of a better word. And it's hard for the guys that have been in the industry for years and years and years and years and years and are known for supplying the best technology to allow a new entrant. And now it's hard for me to qualify Z-Wave as a new entrant now that we've been at this for, coming up on 14 years now, 13 years now. But we still have the more traditional silicon suppliers and the more traditional standards like Wi-Fi, like Bluetooth, and people look at Z-Wave and they say, well, this can't be a good technology because it came from a small company in Denmark and it didn't come from one of the big, you know, one of the big U.S. Bastions of technology in silicon. And so that's a challenge. It's painful. It hurts sometimes to be looked in some circles down upon because our history might be a little bit more humble. But when you take a look at the technology and what we're enabling and how and our success in the marketplace, it goes away pretty quickly. So I think that those are challenges that we have. We certainly continually have challenges with people that misunderstand technology and they are afraid of change, and they take a look at things that we're doing and they find evil in them, and that's a challenge. That's painful sometimes, you know, because there's certainly no evil hiding up our sleeves as we try to use technology to make people's lives better. You know, yeah, everybody would love to age in place with their family beside them, helping them every day, every minute, every hour. And with that in mind, it certainly looks evil that we want to, you know, help somebody age independently who might be alone. And is dependent upon technology to be their connection to the outside world versus their loved one, their immediate loved one. But in today's society where their immediate loved one is living 3,000 miles away, technology gets to step in and help out. So I guess those are the two big kind of pain points or things that cause me personal angst, and that is just, you know, people have a tough time with change. They have a tough time with new technology coming into play, and you just have to continue to sell your benefits over and over and over again until slowly you become one of the incumbents. And I think it's very important as an incumbent then that you don't take that same attitude towards the people that are coming up with the technologies that are coming up in the future. So as Z-Wave now makes the transition from being an up-and-comer to being an incumbent, I think it's very, very important for me and for our alliance and for our alliance members to embrace new companies and new technologies as they come along, rather than taking that position that this is something new or something different, or maybe something from some place that we wouldn't have expected it to come from, so it must be lesser, or it must be bad in some way. I think we have to be very careful about that.
So, Mark, we're going to do a bit of a shift here in this interview, and we're going to talk about areas that are not necessarily related to Z-Wave and the Z-Wave Alliance. And just to get your viewpoints, because you are this world leader and you do interact with other world leaders and major companies and so on. So the first of these questions is about your views on this rapid growth of free content.
I'm generally in favor of free content. Everybody likes to consume free content, but the creators obviously need to be compensated somehow. And that's a very, very tough question. And I know it's one that we've been struggling with societally for a long time. And to some extent, we in just a very short period of years have come to expect free content. I think it is very important that the creators of content are recognized and compensated appropriately, whatever that might be. So I'm not helping you out here because I don't have a great answer to this. I'm very, very concerned with quote-unquote piracy, and I think as an industry or as a society, we need to be very careful to realize that grabbing free content, grabbing digital content that isn't going through proper channels, isn't assuring that the creator of the content is getting some kind of compensation is stealing. It's wrong. We have to be careful not to do that. Now, what's interesting about free content is that we have a whole new set of content out there that is deliberately free, where the creator actually puts it out in the public domain and says, here, take it for free. I don't expect any compensation back from this. And I think it's going to be paramount that we recognize the difference between something that is being given freely by the creator and something that is being stolen, I guess for lack of a better word, and made available freely through technology. And it's going to be tough as a consumer. It's going to be tough to determine which is which. And as a consumer, it's also going to be tough to realize that, some things we're just going to need to pay for, and some things we're paying for in a very traditional fashion. I'm going to buy this song for 99 cents, and some things we pay for in a different way, this content, but I'm going to, have to look at this ad, or I'm going to have to get emails, or I'm going to have to get something. So I think we just have to be very savvy consumers, and I certainly hope as consumers we recognize that we're taking part in a transaction, and there's two sides to that transaction. My dad used to always tell me there's no such thing as a free lunch. I don't think there's any such thing as free content. And if we are getting that content for free, then we're circumventing some system that is important. And sooner or later, if everybody takes everything for free and there's no remuneration happening, that the system will collapse. Content will cease to exist.
So it's clear that this is an area of controversy in your response. And I guess there's another one. And this is this whole idea of crowdfunding. I guess in April of 2012, this sort of U.S. Jobs Act, the Jumpstart or Business Startups Act, was signed. And there's the equity crowdfunding part of it. Some of those policies, I believe, will be in place in April of this year. And there's a rapid movement. You hear about Kickstarter and Indiegogo and some of the other crowdfunding platforms that are out there. So there's been really rapid growth. So what are your views of this whole idea of crowdfunding?
I like it. I think it's amazing what can be accomplished. And I shudder at some of the regulatory issues that have popped up and some of the regulations that are coming down the road. It's a free society. If you want to give somebody $20 or $200 or $1,000 and promise for a T-shirt and a magic Wismo gizmo that may or may not happen a year from now, you should be able to do that. And because of the free communication and the internet and the ability to reach a lot of people, I think it's great that companies can fund on the backs of thousands of people. I do think that there needs to be full disclosure, and I'm completely in favor of regulations that say Protect those that are donating or investing money in a startup through something like an Indiegogo or something like a Kickstarter. But frankly, we should be free to throw $1,000 at a cause and not expect a return beyond that which is offered us when we make that donation or make that investment. And I think it's sad in today's society that people will, you know, donate some money to a cause, and when the cause doesn't happen, then think for some reason that they've been taken advantage of and ask for more regulation. So, you know, buyer beware. A transaction is between two parties. As long as both those parties are accurately representing their positions, then I think the regulations need to stay out of it. Now, that being said, there's always going to be people that take advantage of that situation and, you know, start running scams and bulking people out of money, and they need to be addressed with. But I really do not favor over-regulation of micro-funding or crowdsourcing. I think it's phenomenal, you know, from getting bobsled teams to the U.S. to developing new drugs that would not be invested upon by, you know, a traditional company. You know, we see some amazing things happening in the crowdfunding and just in our technology. You know, we've seen, you know, a couple of guys with a good idea for implementation of Z-Wave go to an Indiegogo or a Kickstarter and, you know, turn around 8-10 weeks later with a couple $1 million in the bank, and now they can pursue their thought. I think it's great.
And then the sort of final question in this series, which has a hint of controversy, is digital currencies. What are your views about all of that?
Again, I think the concept is amazing. It's great. It's what the technology allows us to do. You know, if we want to flash back thousands of years, we had pretty free currencies. You know, we traded beads and we traded blankets. We traded seashells or whatever. And as long as both parties were happy with the transaction, it was great. You know, obviously technology allows us to do that in a much grander scale. And obviously people will do good with those kinds of ability to create transactions, and people will do bad with the ability to create transactions. I don't think we should overly regulate or outlaw electronic currencies, digital currencies, because they can be used for bad. I think the ability to transact business in a anonymous fashion is frankly pretty exciting, and I think that keeps the power where it belongs. I'm afraid that if we allow too much government intervention and too much government oversight of every transaction that happens, that's an individual freedom that we don't want to lose. I'm a little bit of a free market person in that regard. And I think that we have to figure out how to address the bad that's being happened with these electronic currencies, the fact that they're being used to do some things that are really quite abhorrent societally, you know, smuggling and drugs and guns and all that other bad stuff. I think we need to tackle those ills somewhere else. I don't think we should be trying to tackle those ills by limiting the ability or availability of two parties to engage in a transaction in a private fashion. So I guess that's my take on electronic currencies. I'm generally in favor of them. I think we should have the capability to exchange value back and forth in an anonymous way. And if that's being done for ill cause, then we need to address ill cause, not the transactive currency.
Now, as I mentioned earlier, you are an authority in policy. So I'd like your viewpoints on what kinds of improvements in policy should happen in the next 2 years, and what would you like to see internationally?
In terms specifically of electronic currencies?
Policy in the areas that you're involved with.
Policies that I'm involved with specifically, I guess then I would put the low-power radio frequency communication umbrella around, and that may be too narrow an umbrella because I do deal with a lot of other things besides just the Z-Wave technology itself. So technologies and policies in the next couple of years, I would like to see the government free up governments around the world, free up more RF spectrum dedicated for uses like aging independently, dedicated for uses like energy control and energy savings. Right now, Z-Wave and most of the popular home control and building automation technologies operate in what we call public and unlicensed bands worldwide. And so we share our airspace with any number of other applications. And so we may be trying to do something like control a building to save energy or control an environment to help somebody live a better life or possibly save a life. And we're competing with last Christmas's toy robot that's also operating in the same band and the same spectrum that we're in. I would love to see, from a policy standpoint, that governments around the world recognize that building control, home automation, energy and demand response, and some of these applications that I think are so absolutely essential moving forward, get some protected spectrum. Don't give it all to the cell phones. Don't give it all to the TV stations. Carve out a few little notches here and there for us to use for our applications, where we won't be competing with, frankly, you know, very, very inexpensively done consumer electronics that may inadvertently interfere with the very important applications that we're trying to fulfill. And I guess you could turn that argument around too, and where we won't be disturbing the hottest robot from Christmas next year. I think we need to separate some of these key societal benefits and give them some spectrum that is protected for their use, just as we have for other applications.
Mark, we're down to our last few questions here, and this one sort of mines your extensive speaking travels and work, in that you get to interact with a lot of people, a lot of circumstances and events. So you must have some interesting stories to share.
None of them probably that are all that interesting. Yeah, I've spent plenty of my times missing connections in airports and things like this. Interesting stories. I've been very fortunate, or maybe unfortunate, depending on how you want to look at it, to have had just a fantastic run of it, meeting people all over the world, speaking all over the world, learning customs. I really don't have a great story, I guess, to tell, other than just a normal travel faux pas. I have to say that I have greatly enjoyed visiting new countries and meeting people and taking in new cultures and trying new food. But I don't. I'm sorry. I'm going to have to not have a good example for you, I guess, in terms of an interesting story on traveling. Can't really think of one.
Well, it kind of reminds me of a story I just heard this past week, where an executive got sort of, I don't know, distracted when he was ordering his tickets. Anyways, they actually put him into the wrong city.
That happens quite frequently. I don't know if I consider that terribly interesting or not. I did have one return flight back from, I guess I was coming back from Asia, and I had a connection, and I went to the gate and handed the lady my ticket, and she said, yes, sir, you're on this flight, you're on this flight on this day, you're on this flight on this day 1 month from now. And I said, what? And my ticket was literally off by 1 month. And I had, of course, booked online. I'd gotten on Kayak and done it in a hurry somewhere, probably from the back of a taxi cab. And that was kind of an embarrassment. Those kinds of things happen all the time if you travel as much as I do. That had a happy ending, because there was a gentleman right behind me who overheard the conversation, and he said, that same thing happened to me. If you go to your website and buy a ticket on the airline's website, and you pause in the middle, the calendar jumps a month, and you end up buying the ticket. It's different. So fortunately, I didn't have to buy an $1,800 ticket. The airline took down me after the gentleman behind me so nicely pointed out the fact that it was their problem and not mine. But those kinds of things happen all the time. I'm not the best traveler. I continually like to get on the train. I get on the right train, but I go the wrong direction. So that's a favorite one of mine. I get to do, unfortunately, repeat performances of. But I'm very careful traveling to try to leave myself an extra hour or so everywhere I go and try not to run the schedule too tight to allow for doing things like getting on the subway going the wrong direction, because I'm famous for that. But I've been very, very, very fortunate. I can eat just about anything. I enjoy food just about anywhere I go. And occasionally somebody will put something on the table in front of you that may be a little bit more exotic than you're after, but some good conversation and a couple of adventuresome bites will get you through just about anything out there.
Mark, we're down to our last question, and this is where I turn the tables and I ask you, if you were conducting this interview, what questions would you ask, and then what would be your answers?
Wow. Okay. Well, a good question would be, what would you like to tell people that are listening to this interview? What would your piece of advice be to them, and how would you encourage them perhaps to do more in their life and in their career? I think that would be a great question. I mean, you've asked a lot of very, very good questions, and a lot of them have been very kind of general in nature, but they sort of centered around a theme, if I will, and that theme is, you know, how did you get to where you are, and what are you doing with it, and how are you enjoying it? And I would make that question or challenge to the people that are listening to this interview. How do you do this? And my answer to that is, you just do it. Find something that you're passionate about, and allow yourself to get involved with it. Give freely, give openly, listen. And this is not just for business too. This works fairly well in all aspects of life. Don't be afraid to try things. And if you haven't made a mistake, then you haven't tried hard enough. You will have failures. You will have setbacks. You will do things that are wrong. You will upset people. Own your problems. Make things right. Move forward. And so I think that would be my question, and that would be my answer is, you can get to an amazing position like I've been so fortunate to get to with my chairmanship of the Z-Wave Alliance and my general ability to work in this industry worldwide, simply because I'm very passionate about it and I'm willing to give freely and openly, and I'm willing to take the lumps and the bruises when they come, and when I make a mistake, I own it and then move forward. So I think those are great pieces of advice for just about any endeavor.
Mark, I know your schedule is demanding. You are this, as I mentioned, world executive, and we were indeed fortunate to have you come in and do this interview. So thank you for sharing your many deep experiences with our audience.
Well, thank you so very much. I've enjoyed it.
Well, I want to say I'm Stephen Ibaraki, and this concludes our exclusive interview with Mark Walters, President and Chairman of the Z-Wave Alliance. Mark is an international technology standards and policy authority.